All right, we are now recording. My name is Katie Ju, and I'm an intern with the COVID-19 Archive at Arizona State University. The date is March 29th, 2021. The time is 4:23 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I am speaking with Nancy Martinez. Nancy, I want to ask you some questions about your pandemic experience, but before I do, I would like to ask for your consent to record this response for the COVID-19 Archive. The COVID-19 Archive is a digital archive at ASU that is collecting pandemic experiences. Do I have your consent to record your responses and add them to the archive with your name?
Yes, you do.
Thank you. First, can you tell me your name, gender, age, race,
Yes,
occupation? Yeah.
my name is Nancy Blanco Martinez. I am Latina, I'm Mexican. I am 35 years old. My occupation is I'm a registered dental assistant. And I think that's it. Now, what else?
And where you live.
I live in Stanton, California.
Thank you. If you wouldn't mind, can you tell me a little bit about your family, your living situation, like who you live with, before the pandemic began?
Absolutely, yes. I actually live with my brother and his wife and two children, and also well, my husband and my two children, and my mother and her husband, so my stepdad. So
Thank
there's
you.
10 of us.
Prior to the pandemic, can you describe just your average week, where you went, what you did, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so prior to the pandemic, I used to work Monday through Thursday. That's usually atypical. In the dental field, that's your typical work week. It's Monday through Thursday, give or take a Friday. Then I would come home. I would just run errands. If I needed to go to a supermarket, I would come home, help my children. Then mainly over the weekends, we would go out to do activities. We would go to the mall, or we'd go to the beach, we'd go to the movie theaters, restaurants, different places, just to try to entertain them.
Thank you. Describe how your average week changed or did not change after the pandemic began.
So the way my week changed was initially when the pandemic started is we couldn't go anywhere. We were absolutely secluded to the walls of our home, and we honestly were very hesitant to even go to the supermarket. When we started hearing about COVID-19, and we had one designated person who would go for the week to go buy our food and to go look for any sort of cleaning supplies or any sort of disinfectants or anything that we would need, toilet paper, paper towels, things like that. So it changed drastically, to say the least.
And was anyone in your household able to work from home, or were most of you having to go into work, or?
So initially, back in March of 2020, when my dental office got shut down, mid-March actually, my husband was still remotely working. My husband works as security for Disneyland, and they actually stayed open for about another month before they got shut down in April. So he was still working. And my brother and my sister-in-law also work in the dental field, and they actually remained open even during the pandemic. So they never really fully shut down. I think they closed maybe for about a day or two. And also my mother, she is a cashier at a gas station. She never fully stopped working either. I think they were off maybe one day or two, and that's about it. So I think the only one that, or the only ones that fully stopped working altogether was myself for about 2 months. My husband, who is actually still furloughed, he still hasn't returned to work. And my stepdad, who also is in the operations, he works for Knott's. So he's back to work now fully. I think he went back a few months after they had him go back because he's been there for so long. So he's one of their senior employees. And he was only off of work for a few months rather than still fully furloughed.
And then for this follow-up question and for any question I ask you, if you do not want to answer, I should have said this at the beginning. I'm so sorry. Feel free to say, I don't feel comfortable answering that. And we can move on to another question.
Absolutely.
But in the time that you and in the 2 months your dental office was closed and your husband being still furloughed, were you receiving paychecks? Is he receiving any income right now?
Thankfully, yes. He is still in unemployment. When I was furloughed, I received unemployment those 2 months. He is still receiving unemployment, thankfully, because we live in California, both mom and dad, both partners have to work in order to make everything, to make work. he's still receiving, thankfully, an income as well.
All right. I'm going to diverge from my neutralness and say, oh, that's good. I'm happy to hear that. So.
Well, for a little bit, it was tough because they were saying that, he stopped receiving for about a month. So that kind of backed us up. And actually, when we get to the part when we got sick, we didn't get paid. Well, at least I didn't get paid for the month that I was sick. We'll get into that, I guess, or I don't know if I could answer it now.
If you want to,
of course. I was with this employer, and I actually switched jobs between the pandemic. And when I got sick with COVID, I was working with a different employer, and he basically refused to pay me. He said it was optional, and he opted to not pay me. Because he said also that I guess the help was optional, and that that he wasn't forced to pay me. And that's actually one of the reasons why I switched my employment as well.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that, because that's a very vulnerable thing to share. So thank you. Going into the actual contracting COVID part of the interview. If you don't mind, can you describe just your overall health prior to contracting COVID?
Yes. So overall, I would like to believe that I maintain a healthy lifestyle. I, over the course of maybe the last 3 or 4 years, I went on this health journey, which I'm still, in my health journey. I lost about 35, 40 pounds. The ones I gained don't count. I regained during COVID. And I eating healthy, I work out every day. That I know of, I have no underlying conditions, no illnesses. Diabetes does run in my family. My brother is a diabetic. I know high cholesterol also runs in my family. But to my knowledge, I do not have any conditions. I'm not sick. I'm relatively healthy. Just according to the doctor's charts, I am overweight still, even after losing some, the weight. But that's about it.
Great, thank you. I would assume you probably know this. What was the actual date that you were confirmed to have COVID-19? What was the date that this test came back?
The date that I found out that I was positive for COVID-19 was January 2nd, 2021.
And then are you able to look back at the 1 to 2 weeks prior and describe Any activities or things you were doing in those 1 to 2 weeks prior to contracting COVID?
I was working. I was working and I was coming home and just basically trying to stay as healthy as possible, occasional weekly trip to the supermarket. And I would go get maybe food like to go just to try to keep some sort of normalcy, on the weekends. But nothing out of the new COVID normal of, going to work, staying home, and just trying to make do with what we had here.
And then, were you aware of anyone you had been in contact with who had COVID-19?
Before I got sick, a couple of times, well, at work, there we have protocols. We take temperatures, we have patients sanitized. When we call to confirm or to let them know, hey, about their appointments, they inform us, hey, I'm not going to be able to make it because I came in contact with somebody, or even after we saw them that day or a day after. I actually had a couple of patients call us to let us know that they were in fact in contact with somebody who tested positive. So I came in contact with people that came in contact with other people, that actually tested positive. None that I knew for sure that were positive for COVID.
And then one final question about I guess the buildup. Do you have any I know COVID's really hard to trace. Do you have any speculation of do you think you got it at work or at church or like
No, I know where we got, but we did the math, and I'm about 95% sure that I know where I got COVID. My sister-in-law's sister, somebody came in contact with her that was positive for COVID. They were sick. Or I'm let me go back. I'm not 100% sure that the sister knew that they had COVID, but they were sick. Like they had they weren't feeling well, the running. So my sister-in-law's sister came in contact with somebody, and mind you, my sister-in-law's sister is the most cleanest. Like she's very like paranoid. She was very, very careful into who she came into contact with, especially because she is her mother's caregiver, and her mom has, some health issues, and the mom has a couple of, or I believe she has a handicap where she can't really walk very well, and she needs the help. So she was very, very careful, and my sister-in-law's sister came in contact with somebody, and that's how we got it.
Thank you. Were there any symptoms that you had that led you to believe you had COVID?
Not at first, not initially. I'll go back a couple of days. So I want to say the January 2nd was a Saturday. The I believe so that I'm honestly like going back. So I had maybe like a not even scratchy throat, but when you feel like you have the need to clear your throat, but there's really nothing there. And it's not so much a scratchy throat, you're just kind of like trying to clear it because you feel like there's something there, but there really isn't. So I had that a day before, about 2 days before, so like Thursday. But I started getting suspicions of something's happening when my brother actually and my sister-in-law wasn't feeling well on Tuesday. My brother was not feeling well Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then on Friday, we found out that my sister-in-law's sister wasn't feeling very well either. And then I came to find out that during that week, she also wasn't feeling too good. But Friday for sure, she was like not feeling good at all. She had a really bad headache and body aches and stuff like that. So her her sister went and took a test Friday afternoon, one of those rapid tests, and it came back positive. And I wasn't, like I said, my brother and my sister-in-law were the ones that weren't feeling too good, but I was the one that tested first, even though I wasn't really feeling anything, just like that little lump on my throat, I guess you could say. So early Saturday morning, I went to get tested. I actually paid for one of those rapid testings, the ones that within the hour they let you know. And then about 20 minutes after I took the test, I got an email and a text confirmation, and it said that I was positive for COVID, because they tested you for COVID and they tested for the flu, and influenza came back negative and COVID-19 came back positive.
Thank you. What were the first things you did once you got that confirmation?
I was shocked. I'm not going to lie. I kind of had a feeling, but since I didn't have any symptoms, I was like, no, it can't be. Especially because, I wasn't feeling anything, you know, it's just like I said, that little, tickle in my throat. So I was shocked. And then I called my former employer, or my employer at the time. I called to inform him that I had tested positive for COVID. And and then I just came home and I started to, well, my husband actually had me go into our bedroom, and he, basically isolated me, and then just kind of set up. He started setting up our area in my bedroom in order to keep me isolated from the rest of the house. And
And then as you know, your COVID progressed, could you describe how it impacted you physically? You didn't have symptoms at first. Did you ever get the symptoms?
I did actually about the next day, or actually as the day progressed, I started feeling body aches. That scratchy throat started to become a little more scratchier, or that lump started to become a scratch. And mainly I got body aches. And as the days, you know, passed, the body aches became more severe. The shortness of breath. And actually the second day after I tested for COVID, I lost my smell, my ability to smell and taste. So on day two of testing positive for COVID, I lost my smell and taste.
And just estimated wise, how long did these symptoms last? Like the body aches and the smell and loss of smell?
The body aches, and you know, the scratchy throat lasted for about a week. The body aches lasted maybe a good 3 weeks. And I still currently cannot smell or taste fully. It actually comes
really?
And goes. Yes. And oh, I also, I mean, not to try to, I forgot, well, not forget, but I also experienced headaches, which I didn't want to say that it was due to COVID, but they did get worse then. I still get them every now and then. And shortness of breath, definitely the shortness of breath, the ability to not breathe correctly, it's still affecting me today. And yeah, my smell or taste, it comes and goes. It's the strangest thing. Some days I'm at like maybe a 60% of smell and taste. Some days it's back to zero. Some days it's 10%. It varies. And as the day progresses, sometimes it happens throughout the day. I can't even explain it.
Oh, thank you. Did you seek any medical interventions when you were like going through COVID? Like, did you have any telehealth appointment with a doctor?
I didn't. Mainly home remedies, and you know, you inform your friends and family, and then they start giving you the home remedies. And one of the reasons also why I did not seek any medical, like professional medical assistance, was because I don't have medical insurance. And, you know, basically anything would have paid, I would have had to pay out of pocket. And we know that's very pricey. So, but thankfully, it didn't have to come to that. You know, I didn't feel like I had to go to the doctors to get any sort of like stronger medicines than what I already had. My major symptoms were the body aches, the headaches, and, you know, the shortness of breath was, it wasn't as severe to where I was concerned to where like, oh my gosh, I need to go to the doctors. So I just kind of just took things day by day.
Thank you. I think you already answered. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, what I was going to say is, I mean, and you know, they tell you, you have to kind of like quarantine. So there wasn't really anywhere to go if you didn't have like a certain, up to a certain amount of symptoms, or like the severity of the symptoms weren't as, you know, major as one thinks that they are, you know? So they, that's one of the reasons why I also didn't feel the need to go to the doctors.
So thank you. So I think you already answered this, but I'm going to ask it again in case there's anything you want to add to it in addition. If you want to describe how COVID-19, how the infection impacted your livelihood and or your family life. I know you already talked about changing jobs, so you may have already answered this.
Well, it impacted us in a major way. I mean, like I said, I still get, you know, shortness of breath every now and then, you know, the lack of smell and or taste are still there. So it's things that my energy sometimes is a little bit lower than usual. I catch myself getting winded more often or than times that I normally wouldn't. I think just basically that.
And then one final question about the infection itself and its effects. There are some studies that are talking about the kind of like the mental and emotional impact of having COVID-19. I didn't know if there was anything you wanted to share about that.
It definitely impacts you mentally, emotionally, aside from physically. I would cry almost every day. It was painful. I did not want anybody, like I did not wish COVID on anybody. And I wasn't even on the severe side of the symptoms. I just, you know, but the body aches were so strong. I couldn't get up sometimes and I would just cry. I would cry because I felt so, I felt helpless. I felt like, when am I going to get better? Some days I would feel a little better. And then the next day I would just get knocked down even worse. It would come and go, you know, the pain, the headaches. So it really messes with you. Yeah, and just seeing your family, you know, get sick. But like I mentioned, you know, there's 10 of us here and we basically all got sick. The only one that didn't show any signs was my 6-year-old daughter.
Wow. Yeah. Again, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm so sorry that you guys all went through that together, because that's quite a experience. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. I think it's even more painful because, like I said, my brother, you know, being diabetic and having underlying conditions, you know, it made it tough. My mom, she's the only parent I have, and to know that she got sick, and my mom's actually also diabetic, to know that, you know, it could have been worse, to even to think that I could have possibly have lost any one of my family members, you know, that's just, it hurts, you know. And it's interesting because the one person that is the healthiest out of all of us, which is my husband, he actually ended up in the hospital. He had to go to the hospital due to COVID.
And when he was in the hospital, were you still in your infection, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
It was same time.
Yeah, actually, about 3 days after I tested positive and started to basically go downhill, he was having symptoms as well. So he basically quarantined with me. And about 4 days I sent him to go get tested as well. And after he tested, maybe 2 days later, he started to have a lot of complications. Through his job, he had medical insurance, and he had one of those teleconference calls. Hmm. I'm sorry, can you give me one second?
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry, they're watching something and it's really loud.
Oh, no, it's no problem.
Yeah. I lost my train of thought. Yeah, so he through his job, he still has a health insurance, which I'm very grateful for. It got to the point where he couldn't stop coughing. He was bad. He got really bad. He would cough all night. He wouldn't sleep. So I wouldn't sleep because, you know, he's right next to me. And then coughing would make him throw up. And then, you know, throwing up made him have shortness of breath. So it's just like a vicious cycle. And it got to a point where on day four, I still remember that Monday morning, he was just like, just after a night of not being able to sleep and coughing and throwing up. And I called an urgent care, and they had us waiting for a really long time, and they just did a teleconference, and the doctor wasn't even like really helpful. All he said was, oh, well, here's some promethazine for your cough. And we're like, okay, you know, you're the doctor, you know better. We're telling you all the symptoms or whatever. So then I went and I filled his prescription. That's another thing. Like, my mind is very hazy. Like, that's one of the things that I noticed, that your mind just kind of like, it feels almost scrambled sometimes. So he got his prescription for promethazine and he took it. And that actually made things worse, to the point where he wasn't breathing very well. And he couldn't stop coughing and he couldn't catch his breath. So I rushed him into the emergency room that same day in the afternoon. It was like around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And mind you, we got the medicine from the doctor like around 1 in the afternoon. So within 3 hours, he tried to, you know, take the promethazine and take a nap, since he wasn't able to sleep the night before. And it just wasn't happening. And so, yeah, I rushed him to the emergency room that Monday. And when they were wheeling him into the emergency room, like, I basically, out of desperation, I yelled at the lady. I'm like, can you please help me? I'm like, he's not breathing very well. Like, his lips are turning purple. He was just sitting outside, but there was so many people there. And I apologized, you know, I'm like, I'm so sorry. You know, I was just, and she understood. She was like, it's okay, you know. And I'm like, I didn't mean to be rude. It's just that, like, I was afraid that he was just going to pass out. So when they wheeled him in, you know, I just kind of stayed there. And the one thing he told me, which that's one of the things I will never forget, and it hurts to even think, he told me, make sure that our life insurance is up to date. I didn't want to hear that. That was the last thing I heard from him. He said to make sure our life insurance was up to date.
and that was, I didn't see him for 3 days after that. And I just sat outside of the hospital that day until midnight. I just sat outside the window of the ER. I didn't move. I didn't do anything. Just hoping that maybe it was something quick that they would let him go. But they didn't. So they told me that I had to go home. I couldn't sit outside anymore. And mind you, this was me still sick with COVID. But there was nobody else to take him.
Oh, Nancy. Wow. First, thank you so much for you know, openly sharing that. That does not sound like that was an easy thing to even no. share. So thank you so much. Do you need a break to have water? Or?
I'm okay.
You're okay. But yeah, I'm okay. And gosh. So after those 3 days, was he able to come home?
Yeah. So I was, so as you can imagine, you know, one of the things that I like to joke with him is I tell him, like, first and foremost, I'm like, I can't even get sick without you trying to outshine me on getting sick. And then I tell him, I'm like, man, you really did test our wedding vows, didn't you? Like, you really did mean in sickness and in health, huh? Or till death do us part. I'm like, were you already trying to get out of the contract? I'm like, no. I mean, obviously now, you know, I joke with him about that, but yeah, like just, it was just very difficult. Once he got out of the hospital, it was tough. He wasn't fully himself. And they actually discharged him. I bought like one of those pulse oximeters to make sure, that, you know, his oxygen was very low still, but I mean, they needed the space, I guess. I don't know. Like, he was good enough to be discharged after 3 days. And yeah, like, they just gave him a bunch of medicine and sent him home. I don't know if that fully answered your question. I kind of trailed off there.
No, that was fine. That was, I just wanted to get closure on when he was able to come home, man.
Yeah. So yeah, thankfully, you know, thank God it was just 3 days. It was, and I know it felt like forever. It truly did. But it was only 3 days. It didn't have to be more than, he actually got, he had to have a plasma infusion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had oxygen that was in, you know, he had oxygen basically the whole time, and they would try to get him to get up and walk on his own, but he was having a hard time breathing. So, and just a cocktail of whatever other medicines that they gave him. I know they gave him a steroid. They gave him vitamins. They gave him an inhaler. Yeah. So he came home, you know, with a bunch of other medications.
Oh, well, thank you so much for recounting that, because I'm going to guess a lot of people who didn't have COVID really don't.
Yeah.
Know what that experience is like. So thank you.
Right. Right.
This next part, or the last part really, is kind of like your reflections now that, you know, you went through the infection and might have some lingering effects, but the initial infection is gone. So the first question is, how does having COVID-19 impact your outlook on COVID-19? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, now after having COVID, you know, the first initial thing is like, oh my gosh, you know, you try to be careful. Now, just a little side note, in my field of work, in the dental field, I believe just as much as in the medical, you are trained and you are taught to treat every patient, whether it's your mom, your sister, your husband, whoever, you know, treat every patient that walks through that door as if they have a potentially infectious disease. So that's all, you know, and I've been in this field for 14 years. So that's always been my mentality, no matter what it is that you have, you know, or if I've known you all my life, you all, as a patient, you all, you know, you treat your patients as if they have a potentially infectious disease, because people, you know, they lie. They don't tell you the truth in all the medical forms and whatnot. So you have to assume like, hey, you all got something I'm not trying to get. So it impacted in a way that more personal and like a more of a like emotional rather than the illness, you know, like it's more of a, the way it, like I said, it just affected all of us. I wasn't scared even before COVID. I was more cautious. I wasn't scared. I was scared when I got it. And now after having it and thankfully, you know, making it, you know, okay, I guess, through the other side, cautious again, you know, cautious, but I feel like there is a sense of like, almost like relief, or actually there, it is a sense of relief. Like, okay, you got sick, you got this illness that is scaring a lot of people. And, you know, it's killing a lot of people, but you made it, you know, so you have this almost like a more positive look on life. And I would like to believe that I'm a pretty positive person to begin with. So it made me feel like relieved and more positive. You know, I like to joke with my brother because, like I mentioned, I mean, he's my only sibling, so I love him dearly. And I always tell him, I'm like, yeah, I'm like, we're invincible. I mean, we got COVID, like we could dodge bullets at this point, you know, like we're like, yeah, you know, I'm like, yeah, I beat you COVID. Like it's more of a, like, especially because he, having diabetes, and when he got sick, like it was really scary. It was a really scary time. But he was good. You know, he did really well and he made it okay. He seems to be okay. It takes a very emotional toll on you, and you reflect on that more than anything. Cause I don't even remember the body aches, you know, the headaches that I had. It's not one of those things that you're like, oh, you know, like what, I honestly don't even, it's more emotional.
Thank you. Has your opinion, after contracting COVID-19, did it change any of your opinions on either the COVID-19 vaccine or mask wearing or any of the more, I guess, debated kind of topics around this pandemic?
No, because again, being in the, you know, in the health field, like in the dental field, I've always had to wear a mask. And initially when we came back from being, you know, shut down for 2 months and then going back to, we took even more precautions. So we were more protected. We wore the KN95s and then a surgical mask over it. You know, we have face shields. We have the gloves and the hazmat suits. Like we, you know, we were fully covered. And that was never really my concern, you know, the mask thing. You know, I was never like, oh no, I don't want to wear a mask. No, because I wear a mask for like 9-10 hours a day. You know, now it's just having to wear it outside of work. In regards to the vaccine, I believe that God made man, and God made man intelligent, and God created men to be intelligent for a reason. So, you know, and science. So I definitely think that God and science could definitely go hand in hand. So if I don't have to believe in one or the other, and if these people are telling us that, hey, you know, this is safe enough to take, I've always been pro the vaccine, you know. I've walked barefoot in Vegas. I've touched things in Vegas. I think I'm okay. I think I'm pretty much immune, you know. I've eaten plenty of other weird things. I think I'm good. The vaccine does not scare me.
Thank you. And then I have a follow-up question based on your self-identification as Latina. In California, where you live, it's reported that statistically vaccines are being disproportionately distributed to the Caucasian population, and the Latinx population is receiving vaccinations at a much lower rate. I was wondering if you would mind sharing your perspective as someone who identifies as Latina, as whether you are witnessing this in your own world, or if you know of any obstacles within the Latinx community that might be preventing vaccines from happening, or you know, anything around what obstacles might be facing you know, the Latinx community in the pandemic that might be different than other populations.
I can't really elaborate on that. I don't know much. Like, I honestly didn't even know of that statistic. But I mean, it sounds like something that would definitely happen. you know, I think that more our Latino, you know, communities, it's fear. It has to be fear. You know, I think it's more of acceptance rather than, you know, disproportionate sense of like, oh, they're not administering more to this community. I think it's more of like my, you know, the Latino community is more like, no, I kind of, you know, it all has to go with fear of the unknown, fear of not knowing, you know, is it safe? Is it not safe? Oh, you know, but, you know, I can't really say much about it because I haven't seen it, I haven't experienced it myself or seen it myself enough or at all to actually have an opinion on it. So
thank you. Yeah, that's fine. And then lastly, just one final kind of catch-all question. Is there anything else about having COVID-19 that you think would be, you wish people knew or that you would want to share before we wrap up this interview?
I just wish people would not believe in it, you know, like just because it doesn't happen to you or anybody that you know directly doesn't mean it's not happening. Just because you're not seeing all the dead bodies piled up outside of the hospitals or whatever, it doesn't mean it's not happening. You know, someone out there, whether even if it's one person, two people, that's somebody's loved one that, you know, was here today and then, you know, within days or, you know, they're gone. That's unexpected. That's scary. It's horrible, you know, because it's when someone gets an illness and, you know, it progresses and then you prepare yourself for when you have an elderly like person, like you have a grandpa, your mom, anybody, you know, somebody that's all, you know, that their time is coming. But with COVID, this took us like, obviously by surprise. No one was ready. We weren't ready. And to say that, oh, it's a hoax, or oh, it's not real, or oh, it's just like the common cold, you're basically, you're disregarding other people's feelings. You're diminishing their like feelings, their thoughts, their they're not valid, you know, because since it didn't happen to you, it's not important, you know. But moms out there losing their children, you know, children losing their parents. There's kids out there that have lost both parents within days. I know somebody that their girlfriend lost the mom, dad, and the brother within days, you know. And it's like, so their feelings don't matter. So, you know, who cares about them since it didn't happen to you? And that's one of the things that I wish people would just be more cautious in how they, you know, say things and how they express their feelings. Oh, it's whatever. It's just a common cold. It's not, because the common cold doesn't kill people like this. I'm sorry. It just doesn't. even if even one person, it doesn't, you know, and that's just, I don't know, that's just how I feel without trying to make it like political or getting too, because it's true, you know, they've politicized the disease and it's like, how do you even manage to do that? Like this has nothing to do with red, blue, or right, left, or, you know, up or down. It's a disease. It's an infection that caught us all off guard, that we weren't ready for. And instead of trying to, you know, all putting ourselves like together and working through it, you know, we just all kind of ran our separate ways, and one group went here, one group went there, and look at, you know, where it's gotten.
Thank you. Never mind. I'm not going to say whether that was a good answer or not. Just kidding. Thank you. Thank you.
It was an answer. Yes.
It was an answer. Thank you for sharing it. If you don't have anything else to say, I'm going to stop the recording. So if there's anything else at all, you're good.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, then I'm going to
for this interview.
Yeah, thank you. I'll stop the recording.